From the Korea Economic Institute in Washington, D.C., you're listening to Korean Context, news and analysis on the Korean Peninsula. Hello, and welcome to Korean Context. My name is Jenna Gibson, Director of Communications here at KEI, and I will be your host today. In this episode, we are talking with Troy Stangaron. He is a Senior Director for Congressional Affairs and Trade here at KEI, and we'll be taking a look back at 2015 and a look forward at 2016 to see some of the issues and events that have shaped the Korean Peninsula. As some of you may know, every January, KEI staff write a look forward at the year ahead, trying to predict some of the major events and issues that will affect the Korean Peninsula and the U.S.-Korean relationship. In January 2015, we said some of the main things to watch will be Korea-Japan relations, trade negotiations, and domestic social change in South Korea. Now that 2015 is over, Troy, how do you think we did?
We did all right. On five of our issues that we put forward, I think we were largely on target. The other four are what I like to call pushes, issues where maybe things happened somewhat around the way you expect, but not quite maybe the way you had predicted they would happen. And then one where, to be honest, we just didn't get it right at all.
I'm curious, what is the one that we didn't get right then?
Well, one of the things that I think a lot of us thought was going to happen in 2015 was that North Korea specifically, but South Korea to a lesser extent perhaps, and Russia would all be working to improve relations. And if you look back, this made a lot of sense. You had the invitation out to Kim Jong-un to attend the anniversary ceremonies for the end of World War II in Moscow. It looked like it was going to be his first international trip abroad, his first time meeting a foreign leader. So you had a lot of things lining up. North Korea and Russia were also taking and looking to try and improve relations, both on the economic front, on the military front. You had a situation more broadly in a geostrategic sense to where, because of issues in the Ukraine with Crimea and other things, the United States and Russia's relations had deteriorated. So given that relations between North Korea and China were also on a downturn as well, Russia seemed like a logical partner for North Korea to reach out to, and they both had an incentive to really try to work together. But ultimately, Kim Jong-un didn't go to Moscow for the anniversary ceremonies, and everything just seemed to really fall flat. And ultimately, I think that really comes down to is that, you know, at the end of the day, despite efforts maybe to try and improve the economic relationship, there's actually very minimal trade between Moscow and Pyongyang. From a strategic standpoint, you know, maybe in the UN or something, you can have rhetorical flourishes, but Russia's military forces are largely concentrated on the European front rather than the Asiatic front. So while there might have been good rationales for it, internal dynamics really in both countries probably precluded it from happening.
Okay, and how about some of the successes? What did we get right this year?
Yeah, well, one of my colleagues, he's now moved on to his PhD, Nicholas Hamasevich. He did a part of it on sort of the upcoming summits. And one of the things that you kind of know going in is that there are going to be a series of meetings that are going to happen. And with this taking place, we knew that Prime Minister Abe was going to be coming to the United States for a summit here. We also knew that South Korea, Japan, and China were looking to take and restart their trilateral summit. So you had that coming forward. But he also looked at one issue that was interesting. There hadn't been any discussion really at the time of Korea-India summit. And you know, this is one of the others that he put forward that ended up happening. And I think this is kind of crucial because when we look at it, the relationship between India and Korea is one that's not discussed much and everything, but it's one that has a lot of potential. And both countries from time to time have sort of danced around it. And so I think this was one of the significant things. So you know, I think you should get a lot of credit for not only talking about sort of some of the things that would happen, such as Abe being pressured because of the historical issues to put sort of positive statement in his summit in Washington, but to be foresightful enough to see that you would have a summit between Korea and India when there wasn't necessarily one on the horizon. But I think, you know, that's one that you know, we looked at that we did really well on. You know, we talked about the need for better relations between Korea and Japan and how the anniversaries may take and sort of push the two countries to address this issue. You did see ultimately that you had a summit with Park Geun-hye and Prime Minister Abe. But the one thing that, you know, I think we didn't foresee, and to be honest, I think a lot of experts wouldn't have foreseen coming, was this resolution they reached at the very end of the year on the comfort women. You know, I think this is something that a lot of people would have felt would be very difficult for them to try to have a resolution.
Was there anything that took us completely by surprise that was not predicted really at all? And, you know, given that hindsight is 2020, could we have seen some of these things coming?
Well, setting aside, you know, as I mentioned, the agreement on the comfort women between Korea and Japan, I think one of the bigger, you know, I guess they might call them, you know, black swans, if you will, was the incident in the DMZ in August. You know, there are always from time to time provocations between North and South Korea, where the North, you know, we saw in 2010, you had the sinking of the Cheonan, you know, as well as the shelling of Gyeongpyeongdo Island. But I think the challenge is you know, these things may randomly happen at times, but you know, you can't really sort of predict you know, that the North Koreans are going to take and do something like that. So I think, you know, that caught us by surprise, and but it's not something you really could predict. But built into with that as well, I think was also surprising when you look at the agreement they reached. What I think was surprising with that is, you know, while there's been some debate on whether the apology North Korea gave was really an apology for what happened, what I think was fascinating about it is that rather than simply resolving the issue at the time, which was the dispute over one, the landmines that have been placed in the path where South Korean soldiers go in the DMZ, but also South Korea restarting the use of loudspeakers to take and broadcast into North Korea. The agreement went beyond that. It took and one, it called for, which they ended up doing, a series of family reunions. So you had two family reunions in October. And it also called for a high-level meeting to take place between the two Koreas. Now, while the high-level meeting ended up not going anywhere ultimately, I think, you know, what was surprising about this agreement was that it was able to build beyond the crisis at hand and really go and try and address broader issues within the relationship. So I think, you know, that was, you know, a positive surprise. One other thing happened that I think no one would have been able to predict as well was you had the outbreak of Middle East Respiratory Syndrome in South Korea. This was an unfortunate incident that ultimately led to the death of 38 individuals. 16,000 people or so were quarantined at one point over time. So you know, this was a major outbreak that I don't think anybody would have foreseen. You know, it also had a broader impact in terms of we had the issue where the original summit meeting between President Park Geun-hye and Obama ended up getting postponed from the spring into the fall. I think those are some of the things, you know, looking back that you know, we didn't foresee and that would have been difficult.
So again, we have the advantage of hindsight here, but from your perspective, what do you think ended up being one or two of the biggest issues that shaped the peninsula in 2015?
I think when we look back at 2015, the August incident was clearly one of them. It had the potential to basically expand into a much larger dispute and conflict in the two Koreas, and they were able to diffuse that. So that was one of the major things. I think the disappointing side of that was the potential, as I mentioned, for this you know, incident to take and be turned into something positive and build a relationship further seems to have stalled. But I think you know that's one of the major things that ended up shaping events of the peninsula, because if we look over you know, recent years, especially since Kim Jong-un has come to power, it's been difficult to get traction with North Korea on anything. And this was a real chance to maybe try and do that. And so I think you know it was important in sort of shaping policy going forward, but it also ended up perhaps not going as far as you know, many would have hoped. But beyond that, I think you know one of the things we won't see a lot is that you know South Korea continued to have one of the more robust trade policies, not just in Asia, but you know more globally. And beyond just the agreement with China, you know, we saw them put into implementation agreements with New Zealand, Canada, other countries. So they've really expanded their economic footprint, if you will, in 2015. So I think those are probably a couple of things that you know were major issues. The other one, you know, I think is, you know, this is sort of more looking towards 2016 in a way as well, is the relationship between Korea and Japan. One of the things that I think we often forget about the tensions we've seen in recent years is that the current situation or current tensions started before either Park Geun-hye or Abe Shinzo came to power. And so, you know, when you sometimes hear people on either side talk about, well, once one or the other is gone, things will get better. You know, I think that was always a little short-sighted. We did, and I think ultimately the two governments realized they did need to try and find some kind of resolution to their concerns. This wasn't just personality-driven, if you will. And it's unclear sort of how this will transition with the issue or the agreement they reached on the cup of women. But ultimately, if they can improve that relationship going forward, and if this is sort of that first stepping stone, I think that will probably be one of the major issues that takes sort of shape, not only the peninsula in 2015, but going forward.
So I think that's a good transition. Now we're looking forward to the future, starting 2016. Can you give us a quick rundown of some of the major predictions KEI is making for this coming year? And are there any that you can say are particularly surprising?
Well, we're in the process of taking and finalizing this year's 10 things to watch issue. And, you know, North Korea in some ways has already made this interesting. One of the things that I, as the editor, sort of debated sort of putting in was, you know, should we take and ultimately predict that North Korea would conduct a nuclear test? Now, you know, in the process of doing this, you know, ultimately, you know, it's one of those things to where it feels sort of like, well, you could say that every year, you know, almost. And so is it really, you know, a valid thing to say going forward to look for? And at the same time, you know, if you look back, you know, in recent months, there didn't seem to be much indication. There had been some discussion they were working on a tunnel in their test site area. They've worked on the tunnels before in the test site area and not tested. So there wasn't a clear indication that it was coming. And, you know, the North Koreans, I think, really sort of surprised a lot of us by taking, going ahead and conducting their fourth nuclear test. There's still a lot of details to look for in terms of, you know, what the actual test was. Was it a hydrogen bomb, like they suggested, or was it something else? Was it something maybe with tritium, which is a radioactive form of hydrogen, simply to try and enhance the yield? I think, you know, looking forward, one of the big issues is going to be the North Korea issue. In the process of writing this, one of the things that we were looking to talk about was that you wouldn't see much progress between North Korea and its relationship with the United States or its relationship with South Korea. And, you know, one of the things, and I had written this sort of piece originally put in, was that, you know, while that may seem somewhat like talking about a nuclear test, you know, it wasn't because in 2016, there were structural issues that would preclude progress. One of which is U.S. presidential elections and the difficulty that would mean in terms of engaging in really deep discussions with North Korea on its nuclear program. But, you know, in many ways, North Korea sort of preempted that structural issue by putting in place its own structural issue. So, you know, now going forward, you know, we're likely to see additional sanctions placed on North Korea. You know, I think it's going to be hard. You know, we may get back to talks at some point, but to really make any progress in 2016, I think is going to be difficult or even more difficult now due to the test. Some other things to sort of preview to give everybody kind of something to look forward to. On the inter-Korean relations side, one of the things that will be interesting to watch for, I think, is what happens with the summer games in Rio. When we look, you know, ahead, you know, 6 months from now or so is a long time. But, you know, in 2000 and 2004, the two Koreas marched in under one unified banner in the opening ceremonies. They also did that in the 2006 Winter Games. It hasn't happened since. There were talks in the lead up to the Beijing Games in 2008 of actually fielding a unified team. That's probably a step too far, but it'll be interesting to see if there's discussion about trying to go in together, you know, as one group in the opening ceremonies in Rio. I think that will also sort of, you know, give a hint on, you know, have we seen progress on inter-Korean relations or not, or are we still in, you know, a stalled situation? Another big area, you know, that we're looking at is, and this sort of bleeds into 2017, is, you know, we have U.S. presidential elections this year. And when you look at the campaign so far, prior to North Korea's nuclear test, there hasn't been a ton of talk on Korea policy. We've seen, you know, Donald Trump has come out and sort of questioned whether South Korea contributes enough to the alliance. But, you know, beyond that, there's been very little talk on that. You know, I think now one of the things we have to look for is sort of how all the candidates end up responding to the nuclear test and sort of what that means in terms of policy going forward and what it might mean in 2017 when you have, you know, a President Trump, a President Clinton, President Cruz, or whomever ends up winning, and how they take things forward. So I think that's one of the big issues to look at going forward as well. But, you know, not everything needs to be foreign policy related or, you know, focused on simply North Korea. You know, one of the other things that we're looking at is how might things change in the United States for K-pop? Psy had a big hit with Gangnam Style, but not much has happened since then. But there's a new group called 21 to where the lead singer is fluent in English. And so it'll be interesting to see with their new album if that allows them to perhaps, you know, break into the U.S. mainstream market in a way that other Korean groups haven't been able to in the past, beyond Psy with Gangnam Style to a smaller extent, a couple other songs. So those are some of the things that we're looking at along with other issues for 2016.
Great. So over your time working at KEI, you've been helping write these predictions and then going back and reviewing them at the end of the year. How have you learned from this process as the author, I guess, or the collector of some of these predictions? And do you think that we've gotten better over time at, you know, figuring out what's going to be important for Korea?
Well, it's an interesting process. We started it in 2012, and we did the first review piece in 2013. So it's been sort of an evolutionary process. I think what is good and what is challenging about this is there are things that we need to be paying attention to every year. You know, things aren't necessarily completely unforeseen. We knew that, for example, you know, the 50th anniversary of Korea-Japan relations and the 7th anniversary of the end of World War II were going to be a significant theme in 2015. So I think it's important to talk about sort of why these themes matter, what they mean for, you know, Korea, foreign relations, its economic relations, and more broadly for the peninsula. But I also think that, you know, the review process is important. You know, we live in an era where lots of people take and tell you what they think or tell you what they think is going to happen, but very few are going back and saying, all right, so how did we do? You know, what did we get right? What did we get wrong? Some people may, you know, ultimately have different perspectives, but I think one of the ways of taking and, you know, enhancing policy and enhancing what you're doing is you have to take and, you know, be open to that critique to say, okay, how did we really do? And so I think the two pieces are important and they go together. But, you know, what I've learned from that process is that, you know, one, predictions are hard. Sometimes predictions or looking ahead, you know, is something that's very focused on one event. That event could be, you know, we know an anniversary is going to come. We know last year, we knew that due to time constraints, both in terms of when the current 1-2-3 agreement between the United States and South Korea was set to end and how long it would take to put a new one in place, that there was going to have to be a conclusion on a new agreement, you know, last year. So all of these issues are important, you know, in the various relationships Korea has, and some of them like that are sort of self-evident. Some of them, you know, one of the issues that we talked about in 2015, that's sort of much harder to judge, but that's an important thing going forward, tend to be, we'll say, more trend type issues, which is South Korea's population is aging. It has one of the lowest, if not the lowest, birth rate in the world. And so that leads to a lot of significant demographic shifts. With those demographic shifts come issues that relate to how social policies develop, how public health is handled, and these other things. And so, you know, this is one of those issues where, and I talked earlier about, you know, the idea of, I call them the push. So, you know, the MERS outbreak ended up taking and, you know, making public health obviously a major issue in South Korea in 2015. So in that sense, you know, we were right about this, but not in the way that I would have expected it at all. So some of these issues, though, with demographics and things, are important, but they're going to play out over multiple years. It's not simply going to be a 2015 or 2016 issue. And so I think that's one of the things that, you know, is kind of a challenge about all of this is, you know, how do you balance what are important things to watch for, but when, you know, they may not be clear, you know, in terms of their impact in one year or another. I think the other thing that sort of stands out about this process is that it also is useful to help shaping in terms of how do you approach either discussing policy related to Korea or other issues, because when you put everything in the context of how you think the year is going to play out, it helps to shape what you're going to do, because, you know, nothing happens in a vacuum. And so whether you're looking at Korea's growing relationship with China, whether you were looking at the challenges Korea faced with Japan, while these issues may in some sense be separable, none of them happen in a vacuum, and they do play off each other. And so, you know, I think one of the challenges you often see in policy is, you know, you would see people talk about the tensions between Korea and Japan in terms of the context
of China. And while there is some bleed over between two relationships, it doesn't necessarily happen the way one would expect. And so putting things in context, I think, is important. In some ways, the, you know, what issues to watch for in coming year issue of the bloc, important for helping to create that framework and sort of like, okay, how does this all happen? How does this all play out?
Great. So do you have any other final thoughts or things that we should be looking out for as we head into 2016?
I think 2016 will be an interesting year. It'll be a year of transitions. We have the end of the Obama administration coming. You have National Assembly elections in South Korea in April. You have this transition that's still taking place in North Korea, you know, which is one of the perhaps primary reasons for the nuclear desperation of Seoul. But as you see this, how will all the policies evolve over this year? And I think it's important because, you know, what the U.S. and South Korea are able to achieve on North Korea policy in the remaining months of the Obama administration will then take and flow into what will be the final year of the Park Geun-hye administration, the first year of a new administration in the United States. And so when we look at something like North Korea, you know, given the path they're on, it's difficult to see you being able to wait until you have both a new U.S. president and a new South Korean president in place without taking and trying to really address this issue. And so 2016 is going to be a year of working through these transitions, but also building bridges into the future administrations.
Okay, great. Troy, thank you very much for joining us today, and we really appreciate your insights.
Thanks for having me.
That's all for this week. Thank you so much for listening to Korean Context. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes or however else you listen to your podcasts. And you can always check out KEI online at www.keia.org. Thanks again, and we'll see you next week.